The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good morning, and welcome to another edition, another end of the week edition on Analyze This here on your NPR station, the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It's a beautiful day in paradise, straight up and down lovely. Island is cucumber green. I take a drive down towards the Midwestern part of the island yesterday. I had to drop off my mom's island green, my son. Can't find a brown patch at all. Like they say, up the way. You know what I'm saying? So, hey, I went to the hairdresser yesterday. So, Danny, I'm going to need you to put me on live stream for about 5 minutes so people could see the hairstyle. You know. But when you put on the headphones, you're going to hear it. Okay, right now he's talking with San Juan, trying to get the weather service on. Maurice James going to be joining us in a little bit. Freshman senator from the district of St. Croix. Legislature dealing with some run-ins right about now. I know Lakers fans, I'm sorry, but Commissioner Calvert-White, you know, and I was in concurrence with him, called it yesterday. Denver teams, last year, right, after game three, they did the post-game wrap-up on NBA Countdown. It was Stephen A. Smith, Mike Greenberg, Michael Wilbon, Jalen Rose. And they were doing all the analysis, blaming certain people. And Jalen Rose said, and, you know, we could overanalyze this all we want to. They're just better. And look, there ain't nothing I like more than that type of breakdown. You know what I'm saying? But anyway, we got the weather service on the line. So let's find out from the weather service what we're in store for this weekend. Good morning. Who am I speaking with?
This is Manuel Ramos.
Manuel.
Hi.
¿Qué pasó?
Todo bien.
Todo bien.
Yeah.
¿Qué hay nuevo en Puerto Rico?
This week we've all been affected by the surface trough, and basically every afternoon has been pretty active for us over here.
Now, on St. Croix, and I believe on St. Thomas, I'm not sure, I'll find out next week. We are very green. We had a lot of rain. Verde, verde, y más verde. Is that the same in Puerto Rico right about now?
Yeah, I believe the last drought outlook only had the northwest still in drought conditions, but most of the island is, you know, doing very good.
Aguadilla, they're going through a drought situation over there in the northwest?
Yeah, the latest drought monitor still has the northwest section of the island.
Yeah, Rincón.
Under moderate drought.
Rincón, right, over there in the corner?
Yeah, Aguadilla, Moca, okay. more of those areas.
Yeah. Wow, that's interesting. I thought it was the whole region that had gotten heavy rains. We've been getting solid rains. Manuel. Pucha lluvia.
Yeah. Well, that's all good, yeah.
Yeah. We're not complaining because it's going to get warm this year. It's going to get warm, so we're taking it right now. What are we looking at for the weekend?
Well, we still have a lot of moisture in the area that'll keep reaching us. They'll be steered by, at least for today, easterly winds becoming northeasterly through the weekend, especially late this evening into tomorrow morning. We expect a batch of moisture to increase showers for your area as well, for the St. Croix and St. Thomas and St. John, but, you know, expecting scattered showers.
When you say northeasterly, that means they're coming from the northeast or they're heading towards the northeast?
They're coming from the northeast.
Okay, from the northeast. So they're going to be heading in a southwesterly direction?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, so I want the audience to listen carefully, right? Whenever they say the winds are in a certain direction, that's the direction that they're coming from. So it's northeasterly. So it's heading diagonally towards the southwest. They're coming from the northeast. Okay, good. Can we get a marine advisory for our boaters and our beachgoers, please?
For the next couple of days, we expect conditions to be generally favorable for boaters, seas at least. See, starting the Atlantic seas up to 5 feet. It's not until at least Monday where we could get up to 7 feet, which would require an advisory. But we still have to see if that holds. And for the Caribbean seas are up to 4 feet through the weekend. It's not until Monday as well when they go to up to 5 feet, maybe up to 6 feet on Tuesday. So generally favorable conditions. There is a swell affecting the area, but it's not prompting any advisories.
Okay, good. I was just going to ask you about that. So no advisories right about now. Okay, good. Well, we'll call you back on Monday. Enjoy the weekend. Hopefully it's lovely because it's lovely outside now. But you know, like you said, we've been getting some rain. So northeasterly winds should be heading our way in a little bit. Thank you very much, Manuel Ramos.
Yeah, thank you guys for the opportunity.
You got it. That's Manuel Ramos from the Weather Service, Don Mesa. Danny, I was telling you that since I went to the hairdresser yesterday to put on the camera, so my fans, you could do it, man. You could do it, man. Make it happen. Yeah, make it happen, man. Nah, man. Make it happen, man. I want 5 minutes of stream so that my audience, my fans, because they had me on Wednesday. They said they had me on Wednesday when the governor been here, and I had on my fedora, right? I went to the hairdresser yesterday, to dial up, right? You know what I'm saying? And I want 5 minutes, man. Eh? All my lady fans, they want to see the braids, man. What's going on? The whole procedure. Yo, man. Hey, boss, if you're listening, man, tell them to hook me up so my fans can see the braids, man. You know what I'm saying? Nah, I'm just teasing. If I could walk it out, right? Because my chief of staff, she was teasing me about the governor's appearance. And she said, like the hat. You know what I'm saying? So I ain't rocking no hat to that guy. You know, I went to the hairdresser yesterday. And I go let the braids breathe. You know what I'm saying? So at some point, hopefully, if I protest and storm WTJX building this morning, come down and say we want stream, right? So I could see the braids, right? So I ain't holding for Mayo. I want to have to, you know what I mean? It's all good. But like I was saying, Denver Nuggets, the defending champs, tough. Weird on Lakers. They had four players that scored 20 plus points last night. How are you going to beat that kind of balance? How? And then when the defending champs, man, they're like vampires. Once they win, once a team win that ring, you got to kill them the next time, man. Lakers had them to dead Monday night, up 20 plus. And the next thing you know, Denver run them down, nipped them at the wire, and literally snatched their heart. Came out last night, they were up by 12. Same thing happened again. You know what I'm saying? So, Laker fans, you know, I grew up a Laker fan. You know what I'm saying? Well, one team becoming the league, that Laker thing done, right? I was a big Kareem Abdul-Jabbar fan. That was my guy. But you know, Timmy come in, since then I ain't been with them. And was, I ain't a LeBron James fan, and I like me some Kevin Durant, you know, Golden State Warriors, you know what I mean? That's basketball I like. So, Calvert White, you know, you called it yesterday, Commissioner. It is what it is. By the way, when we were leaving yesterday, and Maurice James should be calling anytime now. When we were leaving yesterday, Commissioner White did announce that Bobo Bates from Bates Trucking added 5,000 to the native race, which is the first race on the card, which I think was slated for a 10,000 purse, so it's now bumped up to 15. So you definitely want to give a shout out to James Bobo Bates for Bates Trucking, a horse owner, stepping up and supporting the sport of Kings. And then the majority of the horses in that race actually come out to St. Croix because St. Croix is the breeding capital of the horse racing breeding capital of the Virgin Islands. So I definitely wanted to make sure that I didn't, you know, miss that opportunity and let the public know that Bobo did step up. So Bobo, good looking out. Okay, good. Joining us now is freshman senator from the District of St. Croix, chairman, I believe, of the Education Committee on Workforce Development, I think it is, Senator Maurice James. Good morning, Senator. Welcome to Analyze This. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well. Thank you.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Let me make it clear right off the bat. I love you, sis.
I love you too.
Get that out the way. You know what I'm saying? So now I can apply the whip. Okay.
Now you can apply the whip.
The whip. The whip. Yeah. With questions. It's okay. It's a rhetorical thing, Senator James. It's rhetorical. Okay?
Yeah. I know.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay. Good. Just you know, to break the tension a little bit. Okay. So we're good. Let me ask this question. Let me get right to it. Right now, the chief executive has some issues with the legislature. What's your take on that? Having worked for the chief executive early on in his tenure as the man here in the territory.
What is my opinion on his take with the legislature?
What is your take on the current tug of war, the dispute between the chief executive and the legislative branch?
My take is that it's unfortunate because we have a Senate majority that's Democrat, and we have a governor that's a Democrat, and we have a delegate that's a Democrat. So it's not a good look for us as Democrats in the Virgin Islands. That's the take that I have on it.
Okay.
So
remove the political affiliations. What about the legislative branch and the executive branch in general? What's your take on how that dichotomy, that relationship should be, and how this dispute undermines what the expectations of the people of the Virgin Islands as it relates to governance and good governance?
You need to tell me which dispute you're talking about. What are you referring to specifically?
Well, the governor was on the show Wednesday. This issue mm-hmm. about tapping into the rainy day fund, and his mm-hmm. his claiming that the senators he gonna have a reading class and taking some shots at the legislature. What about that?
Oh, that's unfortunate. I don't think that's in good taste. Clearly, it's coming from. I know you're turning me into a psychologist here because. It's unfortunate because we are all elected officials and we shouldn't take things personally. We should all try to work and understand that we have branches of government that are co-equal, and that although they're co-equal, they have different responsibilities. And when it comes to the legislature and the laws, the lesson that I think for us as a legislature, and I'm a senator, I'm coming from the view of being a senator.
Mm-hmm.
When I looked, and a lawyer actually, because that's what initially when the state of emergency was declared, and the specific code provisions were cited, that's the first thing I did was I looked at the provisions in the code, and I saw where it was ambiguous, I'm going to say, and vague enough for the governor to find a loophole, right? And to say, in fact, that he had the authority to do what he did. And when I read it, that was my first impression of it, and the legal opinion of the legal counsel for the Senate agreed with my reading of it.
And your reading was that you were in agreement with the governor, or you weren't?
Oh, no, I saw where he, listen, in law, if you could find a way to interpret it to suit your position, you will do so. And clearly that's what he did. That's why then we as a legislature, and that's what I'm saying, the lesson to me is to pay close attention. For me as a senator, to pay very close attention to the language that, and I do from the time I enter the Senate, and that's why I always say that, you know, I cannot take off my attorney's cap. I am an attorney, and that's my training. So when I saw what the provision that he cited, the code provision, the first thought that came to my mind was, boy, you really need to tweak the language to make sure that in fact the interpretation is such that you, the legislature, want it to be. That's the lesson that I think we should take from what happened this past week.
Your government engineer shaking his head in agreement with you. I'm serious. And I wanted to buttress what you said, because while the governor was here, not that I agree with it, right? But while the governor was here, his chief of staff texted me and said, Neville, tis our office at the time, and he was working for Positive Nelson. We're the ones who created the Rainy Day Budget Stabilization Act. So in other words, the governor had somebody in-house that was acutely aware of the statute and the ability to interpret it as he saw it. So basically, are you saying we need to make this more of a mandate and not open-ended so it could be interpreted as the governor interpreted?
Yeah, and I you know, unfortunately, I was not able to attend the session yesterday because I ended up getting a stomach virus. I will disclose it. So I could not attend it. But I saw where Senator, I believe it was Alma, I looked at the session, what we could see of it, because then I became just like every other citizen where I'm only seeing what is being broadcast. But Senator Alma Francis Heiliger, and I still haven't seen the language of that, of what she amended, but she attempted to rein in the powers of the governor with regard to emergency powers. You know, but I want to say this too, you know, this is not something that's unique to the Virgin Islands. If you look at history and you look at different governors throughout the United States, the legislative branch has been trying to rein in the powers, and specifically the emergency powers of governors, because it became almost to the point where they would just do whatever they want. You could look at, you know, Florida was one example.
Yeah. Hold on a second. I like the fact that you made that mainland reference to let the public know that what we're dealing with here isn't unique to the Virgin Islands, which is good, right? So we'll take a break, come back. We got Freshman Santa Maurice James on the line. We also talk about the education committee that she chairs, what have you. We'll be back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on Analyze This, and we've got St. Croix Santa, Maurice James, joining us this morning here on Analyze This. Good morning, Santa. Glad to have you on.
Hello.
Good morning, Senator. Glad to have you on.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be on.
Okay, good. So you were saying governors are testing their limits, and
yes.
And you have... You have a situation here in the territory that is somewhat pervasive at the gubernatorial level. is that the right term?
Saying, when you say this if you think about it, this the governor said this was an emergency, okay? And so anytime there's an emergency, you want the governor to respond quickly to an emergency, but at the same time, you don't want the governor to abuse his power. And that's where the separation of powers comes into play with the legislature saying, hey, we need to know. We have to be involved. And like I said, I haven't looked at the language yet, but some states, for example, have required that if there's an emergency, the first thing the governor has to do is call a special session right away. Because that then enables the legislature to be involved. And that's why it goes back to what you were saying before, right? We are elected to represent the people, so we should be working collaboratively to solve any emergency that arises. Because we're all elected, we all should have a say in what's happening and affecting our people. And one of the ways to do that is to, that was off the top of my head. I know that some states say, if there's an emergency, especially in this day and age with technology, governor, call a special session. We all appear. We all fly over at the same time, and we deal with it. But, I do want to point out that the legislature had already begun the process of addressing this issue because we were going to have the emergency session. There was already... We were going to have the finance people in front of the finance committee,
mm-hmm.
and then we were going to have this session. So this came. We were blindsided, quite frankly. We were blindsided
the actual name of the committee, because they changed it, right? The budget appropriations, something like that.
Appropriation and finance, right?
Yeah.
The legislature was blindsided by the Monday's press conference.
Okay, and the designated the territory under the state or territory, right? State of emergency that took place on Monday. Now let me just be devil's advocate here. Suppose we have an emergency that's in real time though. And I think one of the governor's arguments was that he couldn't afford to have water and power authority cutting off right, for certain agencies and all that stuff. I'm just trying to get everybody's position here.
And you know, that's why, that's why you write the lot for all these different circumstances, right? You write it in such a way that if you have sufficient time, but should we not have, how was the emergency created, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe by
because he said this right here in the studio. This goes back to December. Apparently, this is an aging issue as it relates to the most recent problem, right?
Right.
So that's what he said. Now, I ain't taking no side on this. Matter of fact, I actually told the governor White to know, I am pro legislature for obvious reasons, having served there.
Yeah.
So that's just my take. So don't be surprised if I counterpunch and all that. Some people believe I'm a little soft on him, but they're entitled to their opinion. The reality is, we got to do what we got to do in terms of governance. Because I wrote down three things to the governor. I said, governance, we got a financial issue here, we got a governance issue, and we got a political issue. Because I said, the senators have a contract call this year that you don't. So you got to factor that in as well. And then
that's exactly, I'm glad you said that. Because I think that plays into it too, knowing that this is an election year for the Senate, it then creates more tension within the legislative branch than it would otherwise. Would the governor have behaved the same way if he was up for election this year? So we have to remember that election years affect how we rule, which is unfortunate. I have always felt going into the Senate that I would not allow that to happen to me, that I would be the senator that I am, whether it's in an election year or not an election year. And I am staying true to that in the way that I operate. I'm not, and I say that to say that I'm not, I feel like I have to serve the public regardless of, because they put me in for these 2 years. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
The reality is most people focus on re-election.
The next election.
That's just natural for people to do. And I understand that. I do not operate like that. I need everybody to understand that. Maurice James does not operate like that. Because I think the issues that we have are too important for me to focus on a campaign and not on the present day realities of what we're dealing with. And so this whole situation with this emergency was really just unfortunate for me. I need to say this though. The saddest part of it was the hospitals for me. I am very concerned that you would take money from my hospital. Let's say that the $200. Okay, I admit the hospital owes money every month for electricity, right? But we don't turn the hospital off ever because we understand we should not morally, ethically, legally, we should never have a hospital that doesn't have electricity. You agree with me with that, right?
I actually I actually spoke with the governor about that. We went through the same thing back in 2016.
Okay.
Which to me is the problem, because the problem has been fixed. But I did ask the governor, I said, governor, when we construct these new hospitals, are we putting in generators so that the hospital isn't, a part of the problem going forward as it relates to paying WAPA? And he said solar and battery is the way they're going to go going forward. So maybe that's a remedy as it relates to the hospital. But again,
but right now,
it's about governance, right?
Right, and right now, that's the future. You're talking about the future. I'm talking about right now.
When you
withdraw $200,000 from a hospital allotment, and the hospital doesn't have basic supplies to take care of people, what are you saying to people? What are you saying to all the people of the Virgin Islands? You know what I'm saying? We must, and this is because too, the reality again, uncompensated care. We're not being real about the population that we have. We see the kids come out and say 40% of children live in below the poverty level. Doesn't that mean that their parents too are living below the poverty level? Isn't that what that means?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so how can you take 200,000, and these are people who cannot leave the island for medical care. They cannot. They have to go right there to Wang F. Louis, right now north, for treatment. So I did not feel, and I still don't feel good. If for me personally, if we do the single payer fund that, you know, where they're pulling the money out, the single payer fund, I believe that the hospitals should be exempted. They should not fall into that category, because until we fix the hospitals. That's my position.
Well, you know something, and just to wrap up this part of the conversation, because we got other things to talk about, we got to get out of crisis management here in the Virgin Islands. It looks like that's the only way we want to function, and that's not good, you know. And it's worked to people's political benefit, right?
Right.
In the past, and at the expense of more people than less, yeah. And that is not good. No. Let me ask this question. Our listeners, you know, the listeners, they're chiming in today. Ask a question. They say, Bruce Smith is supposed to be sentenced today, and this is the young man who had this problem sexually abusing students up at Charlton Mali High School, right? They say, as chairman of the Committee on Education, did you ask for or receive any information from the Education Department into the department's investigation of the matter? And do you know of anybody else who knew about the abuse? Are you aware of this unfortunate matter that took place up there at Charlton Mali High School?
Well, I don't know any more than than what was revealed in the media. Nor would I, as a senator, want to know any more details. Than there's always a need to know. That's my thing. I don't need to know any more than that the legal system and the justice system is doing what they're required to do. The education department at some point, especially this was a crime. So if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
The immediately when it became known, let's say, and I'm using known because you never know who knew before, but when it became known to the authorities, which would in this case would be the Department of Justice, and they took action on it, at that point the Department of Education's role is to cooperate with the Justice Department and give them all the information that they need to know in order to prosecute the individual. So I trust that is what happened, that the Department of Education cooperated and provided. I don't want to say any more than that because there are concerns that fall into me being if I was a private attorney, some other things that in terms of the parent,
mm-hmm.
and let's just say I leave it at that, because.
Well, let's speak generically. Are you saying that based on your background, you want the sentencing aspect of this to be completed before you are to delve in, if you were to delve in going forward, or because of the sensitive nature of this matter that involves children, you prefer that it remain a Department of Justice, Education, and Human Services issue? Because I know those three agencies are involved in it.
Well, it is their issue. And it is in fact their issue. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that if I were a parent, taking myself as a parent and as a parent coming to me as an attorney, separate and apart from the justice system, I am hopeful that the parents, I think maybe that's what I need to be a little more specific about, that the parents of the children are satisfied with what was investigated, what was told to them, what was revealed to them, and whether or not the Department of Education, knew or should have known, right? You wonder about things like that. So that's what I'm saying, the attorney in me. But when it comes to the process, you have to leave it. The legislature, all the legislature knows, and the education committee needs to know, that's my position, is that justice was served.
Oh, okay.
And that...
I get it. No, so you're saying this isn't so much an education problem. This is a justice... This is a justice issue, Department of Justice issue, and that education happens to be the agency?
Yeah. And also now, remember, the Department of Education itself, where we would come in, right?
Mm-hmm. Where would education and the education department, and in your case, chairman of the education committee, where would you come in as it relates to remedies going forward?
Right, and that's what I was going to say. That's the thing, is that what has the Department of Education done to ensure that this does not happen again?
Okay.
What practices, what policies, what procedures do they have in place to prevent anything like this ever happening again? And that's what we need to know.
Should there be some sensitivity about parents being concerned as it relates to other faculty who may have known what was going on and still there now? What about looking at it from that perspective?
You kind of pinpointing what I'm saying, that that's where parents, I need to get this across. Parents have power. And they need to exercise that power.
Oh, okay.
Neville.
I like that one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they need to demand, especially the parents of children that were affected or were even unaffected. Could be that I'm a close friend and I know that this happened to my friend, or I knew it could be any, but parents have power and they need to act. Make sure that the Department of Education is accountable for what happened.
But check this out. We got into a break, so I want you to think about this during the break so you could answer it to the best of your comprehensively, to the best of your ability. What about the counter argument, which is how people look at elected officials, and their counter argument is, yes, Senator James, parents have power and they need to exercise their power. But I elect you. I use the chair of the Education Committee. And we need for you to represent us in this regard. So think about that, because we got into a break now. I don't want you to start answering, then I got to cut you off. We're talking with Senator Maurice James. They also talk about the Education Committee as it relates to what kind of legislation and meetings they're looking at going forward. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
Okay.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
As the news gets more complex and changes through the day, you need more than just a quick headline check. Here and Now keeps you connected to your world between Morning Edition and All Things Considered, as the news and the people shaping it are changing in real time. I'm Robin Young. Follow along on Here and Now, NPR News weekday afternoons.
From 2 to 4 on WTJX FM,
your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on... Wait, we give you a chance to impress your friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists. You'll be the life of the party. Or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here. Analyze this. Having a conversation with Sandra Maurice James from the District of St. Croix, Chairman of the Education. What's the Education and Workforce Committee? Sandra James.
Yes.
Okay. Good. Glad to have you on. So, like I was saying, what about the wrap up this part of the discussion? I don't want it to take up everything. The public has an expectation. With respect to its elected officials, what about those who are looking for the legislature, their elected official, to address this particular matter and look at potential remedies? What would be your response from that perspective?
Well, the only remedy that the Education Committee can provide is finding out from the department. Now, for example, that, as you said, the sentencing is happening and going forward. And that's what I'm saying. The only thing that we can do is going forward, finding out from the Department of Education what they're going to do to prevent this from happening. And I'm distinguishing it from when something happens to a child in school, for example, I'm going to use the states again, a school shooting, right? Initially, you see where there's investigations, and then there are the result of the investigation is whether or not someone should be, a lot of times, whether they should be fired, whether they should be arrested. You know, those are some of the things that you see come out of the criminal investigation of, and also the school investigation of what happened. We don't know at this point, and I think that's what you're saying, if the Department of Education punished anyone else besides the perpetrator. Is that what you're asking?
No, that's exactly what I'm asking, because at this point, that's all we know. We've heard that name.
Yeah, we don't know.
And I'm sure one of the positions, the territory wide positions, I mean, not necessarily positions, questions. Two of them actually is, well, how long has this been going on, and who knew?
Right.
You follow what I'm saying? So when we're looking at remedies, the remedies should at least, you know, address those issues, those protective necessities going forward.
Yeah, I agree. So what we need to find out now from the Department of Education is whether or not they conducted an independent investigation, or what they learned from the investigation conducted by the police as to whether there were other actors, in a sense of people who, you know, we could... People forget that there's crimes of commission, and then there's crimes of omission.
Correct.
Where we didn't do what we were supposed to do, right? So were there people who did not do what they were supposed to do to protect our children? And yes, that's where, that's the question that can be asked by the education committee.
Okay, good. Now let's move on from that because I don't want to belabor that point. As relates to workforce development and education, legislatively, what are we looking at in real time right now?
Well, right now first of all, I think that there are enough programs and opportunities in terms of workforce development when you look at the Department of Labor, when you look at the Career and Technical School, that the issues with, for example, the vocational school has to do with the fact that the physical facility, two, the instructors, and there's the issue of not being able to hire, like, for example, an electrician to teach because, again, of the contract with teachers. So there are issues that we have to work out, but I don't think there's a need for legislation per se when it comes to workforce development. We just need to do a better job of executing, and this is now where it goes to the executive branch, of executing what we do have, of implementing what we do have. I attended an adult education career day that was held down at there in the Juanita Gardein facility. It was excellent. The adult educators were exposed to opportunities that exist in. I believe that the Department of Labor, based on the presentation that I received, I sat in there as if I was an adult person in need of learning more about labor and what it, the presentation was excellent by those people. But there are still gaps that are existing and need to be closed. A big part of what we are experiencing here is people. We don't have the people. We have an aging population, okay? And then we don't have the people that we need to work on the island. So even if you develop who you have, and there are lots of programs to develop those, I see it happening all the time. The Workforce Development Board, they're doing the best they can. As a matter of fact, I'm not at liberty to disclose some of the things that are in the pipeline that you're working on, because I think you don't want to steal people's thunder. But there are things happening on the ground. So there's no need for legislation right now in terms of workforce development. Where I wanted to stress to you, where there is a need, and I have legislation that I'm working on, is we don't have a system of early childhood care and education. And so what I mean by that is that you can have a child that's being helped by the Department of Human Services, the Department, and maybe helped by the Department of Health in one of their programs, and also, of course, is going to school. And those departments need to do a better job. They are trying, but they need to do a better job of bringing all that data together in one place to really serve the whole child. And I have legislation that will create a system. And but again, because I'm very particular about legislation and drafting, I'm spending a lot of time working on a language and speaking to people and seeing whether or not it would work.
So this is policy and structure?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely. Okay. And of course, I they're aware of it, but I'm still working on a language. But that's where we have to right now, we need to focus on those children. We need to focus because a child that, by the time a child is 5 years old, 90% of the brain has already developed. And we have children who are coming to school who, you know, there was a cartoon that showed a child
entering a classroom with a big piece of luggage that they're holding on to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the question was, you know what's in that luggage? Hunger, abuse, neglect, poverty.
Wow.
Things that a teacher has to deal with every single day.
And expected to educate at the same time.
At the same time. And so the bill that I have that I'm working on is going to bring those forces together to effectively meet the needs of that child and their family.
Let me ask this question. Do you believe teachers are working shorthanded right now?
Shorthanded?
Yeah. From the standpoint that, based on what you just said, which is, it looks like parenting, which is inherent with teaching to begin with, but it's more, you know, prevalent now than it may have been back in the day?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I was a teacher. I was a teacher back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And what I see parents dealing with now, I mean, teachers, well, parents and teachers, quite frankly, it's a heavy burden. It's a heavy load on them. But if you decide to be a teacher in our society right now, you have to understand that that's what you're going to be meeting at the door of your classroom. And you have to be prepared to meet and be given the tools and the resources. And that's where I think the Department of Education is going to have to step up to assist teachers with those tools and resources they need. Now, let me say this, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say one, say two. I meet teachers who complain about parents, and I meet parents who complain about teachers. So what I found is I try to go and attend parents-teachers meetings, and 5 parents show up. Again, if I have to stress on your show today, and again one more time, parents, you have the power. You are the one who should know whether or not your 7-year-old can read or can't read. And I met a parent who was so honest with me. She came up and she said to me that she realized that her child could not read. And so she went to school, and initially she was not getting the help she needed. And her frustration was simply that it's coming down to having the right teacher, which is unfortunate, right? You know how we say we want to go to the right school. You want to send your child to the right school. It's coming down now to saying, I want to make sure my child has the right teacher. That's unfortunate, because all teachers in a school should be the right teachers, right? Or should the teachers who are expert at doing what they're doing should mentor those who need help? You need to see things like that happening. I also, and I'm going to say this, I learned from some people who want to volunteer in schools that they're seeing a resistance by teachers, and even some parents who said they wanted to volunteer in their children's classes, they're seeing a resistance by the teachers. So it's a lot more, Neville, than even I thought. The dynamics of what's happening in our territory is a lot more than I myself even realized. And I don't know if as a people we're just traumatized, whether we're teachers, parents, or whoever we are, and it may be that, but we're not working together even at that ground level where a parent will say, hey, I'd like to come into the class and spend time, and a teacher says no, or the principal says, well, no, you have to make an appointment. Those are some of the things that we shouldn't be dealing with. And that's not at the, and think about it, you know, that's not at the commissioner level. That's at the classroom level.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be seeing that happening. We should see people embrace volunteers and people who went and did what they needed.
Have you inquired about this? Because maybe this is it a department policy or a school policy, what have you?
No, sometimes it just comes down to Well, you know, I don't even know what it comes down to, because you get excuses, you know, that.
I like, by the way, I like that kind of, because one of the things that elected officials unfortunately do, some elected officials, a number of them is, and I keep telling them this, and I told them this while I was there, you know, there's some things that you don't know. And you better saying, I don't know, instead of wanting to give the impression and impress people all the time that you know everything. You know what I'm saying? So I like when I like how you just arrive right in mid-sentence at that. You know something? I don't know. Yeah, seriously, there's something genuine about that. You know what I'm saying? So it might be politically incorrect, but I find that attractive because it's truth. That's what it is. It might be candid, but it's truth.
I would promise the people I would speak truth. You know, I say I speak truth of power, but it's more important. I want the people to know that when I say I speak truth of power, I also recognize the power of the people. So I'm speaking also to the people when I make a statement.
That's what I'm talking about.
I want to talk about.
But time flying, and we only got like a minute and a half. So knock it out, please.
Okay, well let me just wrap up and say one thing. I am collaborating with the governor, by the way, on one thing, and that's Williams Delight. And I believe that he is sincere about my proposal that I've given him, because people need to know that.
What exactly about Williams Delight?
Well, Williams Delight, these people have been waiting since 1995 to purchase their housing unit.
Oh, so it's a home ownership situation with Williams Delight.
I call it an anti-poverty and home ownership initiative. Okay. If you are asked, think about this, if I could say this quickly. We sometimes think that we are helping the poor when, in fact, we're benefiting. By helping the poor, we're not benefiting them. By helping other people, the people, for example, who exploit them. And I'll give you a good example. When we say we increase the income of a person, a working person who is living in public housing, and then we expect they have more disposable income. No, they don't, because then their rent increases, right? So think about it. You are not really helping them. When they have to go and apply for a loan, they pay a higher interest rate than you and I.
Correct.
So who pays more in this society than the working poor? And we need to face that.
Senator, here's what I'm going to do, right? Because normally I always do this. Don't hang up. Because, you know, hospitality is one of our attributes here on this NPR station. We're going to wrap up this conversation immediately after the 9 o'clock break. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Morning Edition takes you across this country and around the world with stories that keep you informed and the context to understand what matters. The news comes at you quickly, but we slow it down to examine each story from different angles and give perspective on what might happen next. A brand new day comes with new possibilities and a new edition of Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays at 5 a.m. to 8 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
Meet an amazing American dance master.
I'm Alvin Ailey. I'm a choreographer. I create movement.
A black boy could actually dance.
Being able to say through the choreography, I am, it transcends dance.
The dance was the miracle.
For the man and his dance company, don't miss Ailey on American Masters.
Tune in April 27th at 8 p.m. on WTJX TV Channel 12.